Question 1. When you go from a dark room into a well-lit room, does your pupil A. contract, B. rotate, C. dilate or get bigger, D. stay the same? The answer is A. contract. Explanation. The iris is a muscle that sits behind the lens and in front of the vitreous humor at the front of the eye, and it contracts to restrict the amount of light that enters the eye. So the hole in the center of the iris, that's contracted hole, is the pupil. So the pupil is actually not a part of a body. So you can't actually extract a pupil or do anything with it. And so the brain operates that when it receives some light, it monitors the amount of light and adjusts the amount of light onto the pupil such that it is at the optimum range. So when there is more light, the pupil contracts to restrict the amount of light on the pupil. Question 2. A couple has 4 children. Both the mother and the father have each a dominant brown eye colour gene and a recessive blue eye colour gene. What is the most likely outcome in the number of children they'll have with blue eyes? A. 2 in 4 will have blue eyes. B. All their children will have blue eyes. C. 1 in 4 will have blue eyes. D. 3 in 4 will have blue eyes. The answer is C. 1 in 4 will have blue eyes. Explanation. There are a lot of complex terms in genetics that all have specific meanings. So a gene for something will be, say, the gene for eye colour, and that is actually referring to a sequence of genes which a gene codes for a protein, but a sequence of proteins will give you a particular eye colour. Now, whether you get blue colour or green colour or brown colour, that is called an allele of the gene. Now, there's yet another term, so that's a phenotype, that is behaviour, a trait. So a gene codes for proteins, and a group of genes go together in a phenotype to give you a particular allele. And then you also have the thing called genotype, which is the genes that you bring, you have. And so a genotype refers to whether for each gene you have 2 copies of it from your mother and your father, and there's either 2 dominant, a dominant and a recessive and a dominant, 2 recessive. The genes have got not equal strength from your mother and your father. So you get pretty much a sequence there. So if you get 2 dominant genes, if there is a dominant gene, that will be expressed, that allele will be expressed, and the phenotype will go. So if you have a father which has two brown eye genes and brown, which is the pigment gene, brown eyes for brown irises, it means that all the children will have brown eyes. However, and if that's, if the, no matter what, in this case it really doesn't matter whether it's father or mother, the case in which you will have something unusual is when there's a dominant and recessive, meets a dominant and recessive, and one in four of the children will have two recessive and have the recessive allele or phenotype. So phenotype is the expression of a gene. Question three. In humans, when your iris dilates, what happens to your image that you form? A. It becomes fuzzier. B. Nothing happens. C. It becomes sharper. D. It becomes easier to focus. The answer is A. It becomes fuzzier. Explanation. A lens forms an image when light passes through it, originating from an object, and then gets bent at different points on the lens to come to focus on an image. Now, the sharpness of that image is whether different parts of light falling on different parts of the lens go to that point. Now, in our machined world, we can actually machine a lens so perfectly that if we expand the size of the lens, we catch more rays, and the more rays come in at different angles and give you actually a sharper focus, but a narrower focus range. So if you use a big camera with a large lens, you can actually get a very sharp sharp focus, because it's computer generated and it's computer machined. It's a perfect lens. In nature, it's not that way. The lenses are good compromise, because they can change shape, but the larger lenses do a worse job. They gather more light. They do a worse job. So for machines, larger aperture means a sharper focus, but for animals, you can get a sharper focus, actually sometimes getting a smaller lens. It's a more complicated process, but for humans, you can see a sharper image with a smaller aperture. You're using less of your rubbishy lens, your lower quality lens, and so you can actually see more clearly in a very bright room, so your irises shrink down and you're not using the lower quality sections of your lens, and you get for humans, a higher degree of focus. Question four. What type of lenses do short-sighted people require? A. Convex magnifying lenses. B. Concave demagnifying lenses. C. Lenses that restrict the amount of light entering the eye. D. Polaroid lenses. answer is B, concave demagnifying lenses. Explanation. Short-sighted people can only see things close to them, and things far away from them become too fuzzy. In fact, it means that their lenses are too powerful for the shape of their eye, that this has too much magnification power. So it works really close, but their eye can't accommodate things a long distance away, which will require a weaker, less focused lens. So, incredibly, short-sighted people require lenses that demagnify the images in front of them. Question 5. Far-sighted people require corrective lenses that are A, concave and increases the amount of magnification, B, concave and decreases the amount of magnification, C, convex and decreases the amount of magnification, D, convex and increases the amount of magnification. The answer is D, convex and increases the amount of magnification. Explanation. Far-sighted people can see objects a long distance away, but have difficulty seeing objects closer towards them. Their lenses are, in fact, not powerful enough. Question 6. Your side or peripheral vision is mostly a photoreceptor called rod cells. These are best for A, color vision, B, detailed vision, C, motion detection, D, ultraviolet vision. The answer is C, motion detection. Explanation. There are three types of light-sensitive cells in the retina. There's a light-sensitive cell which just detects blue light in general and sends signals, nerve signals and hormonal signals to set your circadian rhythm, so your body adjusts to night and day. Then there are photoreceptors or image-forming cells, which are nerve receptor cells, which eventually send signals back to the brain, and they are the rod cells, the black and white cells. They just detect the level of light, and they're spread throughout the eye, and they cover peripheral visions on the sides, so they're not as dense, but highly sensitive to light and motion. So they have high light sensitivity and high motion control, but they don't have high resolution. In the center of your eye, the macula is densely arrayed cone cells. They're actually so densely packed, they point up like cones, like, I suppose, carpet pointing upwards, and that type of cell is your color vision. So it means that your peripheral vision doesn't innately have colour vision in it. It's really black and white, but your brain paints the colour out from your central vision out to the side of your vision. So it's actually painted. Question 7. When staring at a cloud or a very blue sky or in a room where there are no features, you'll sometimes see these little patterns, shadows in the back of your eye. They are caused by A. Imperfections in your retina. B. Brain damage areas inside your head. C. Scratches on your lens. D. Old blood cells floating in your eye. The answer is D. Old blood cells floating in your eye. Explanation. Humor. And its main role is to actually keep your eyeball inflated in shape, so it's at a little bit of pressure. If the pressure gets too much, you get glaucoma or blindness. But inside this is quite complex. There are tendons, see-through tendons, which actually go across the vitreous humor, and there's also channels which allow material used in the eye to be cleaned, and so there's a channel which actually goes in behind the lens and supports it. So there's a lot of interesting aspects in there. But as you get damage to your eye, or the small bleeds, small little blood cells float into the vitreous humor, and they float in front, and plain light coming into your eye. So when you look after an intensely blue field, and you've got nothing to disrupt the processing, your eye will begin to process the shadows on the eye. Now, the shadows are not shadows like bits of rain. They're so small that the actual light bends around, so creates a diffraction shadow around the back. And these are called floaters. So these are the things you actually see, old red blood cells at the back of your eye. Question 8. What are the characteristics of white blood cells that defend your eye from infections? A. They can only operate inside the eye. B. They can travel outside your eye in tears. C. Within the blood vessels of the eye. D. They can only operate inside the eye near blood vessels. The answer is B. They can travel outside your eye in tears. Explanation. Your eye is protected by tears, but inside the tears are special white blood cells. These are special killer cells which go out onto the surface of your eye and outside your body and actually go outside your body and actually attack infection. Question 9. When walking and looking straight ahead, the image that you see is A, stabilized by processing on the image of the retina, B, unstabilized and shaky, C, stabilized by your brain, D, stabilized by the movement of your eyes. The answer is C, stabilized by your brain. Explanation. The eye feeds the brain an upside down image and a shaky image, and these upside down shaky images are restructured and painted into your neurological vision of the world, but it actually image stabilizes what you see. Question 10. When a doctor shines a light in an injured person's eye and checking for the pupil dilation, what are they checking for? A, optic nerve response. B, basic brain function. C, retina response. D, consciousness. The answer is B, basic brain function. Explanation. The time requirement to adjust your iris is so great that it actually uses brain functions and nerves well in front of the optic processing area at the back of your brain, which is rather slow. So this is why when a patient is dying and they're checking for brain death, the doctor will shine a light in their eye and check for the iris response, because this doesn't check the back of the brain, it just checks whether the basic brain function is operating. It's called the iris reflex.